is advised that the audio of this General Council meeting will be recorded and will be made available on the City of Marion website. I ask if any elected members have a declaration of interest in respect of any item of business that's anticipated. No one coming forward, that's fine. We'll keep going. I'm after a motion to confirm the minutes of the council meeting held on 23rd of February, and I think we could incorporate into the motion the confirmation of minutes of the special general council meeting held on 8th of March. If someone, Councillor Telfer moves, seconded Councillor Byram, all those in favour? Against, that's carried unanimously. May I have a motion accepting the reports from the Mayor, members and Chief Executive, Councillor Blescu, Deputy Mayor. So moved. Is that seconded? Councillor Byram, any questions before we vote on it? I'll just note that I did find the Lean Management Conference in Sydney that I attended last Wednesday useful. I thought it was going to be a weight loss program, but it was actually much more useful than that in terms of some lean management ideas, which I'll pass on to the Chief Executive and Senior Management when I've got my notes written up. Then I'll put the motion, all those in favour, to accept the reports, all those against, that's carried unanimously. We now come to, there being no deputations, we come to petitions on page 25 of the agenda. There's a petition in relation to the mobile phone tower. And I just want to preface the, I'll turn to Councillor Piper in a moment, but I just want to preface this by stressing that, rightly or wrongly, the way the planning system is set up, we have a development assessment panel. I think some members of the public might have attended that last week, and that is distinct and separate from council itself, although some of the councillors serve on it with a number of planning experts, whom we call independent members on the development assessment panel. So when it comes to decisions like phone towers, there are two difficulties faced by council as we sit here in a room. One is that the decisions are made by the development assessment panel, but there's an additional complication that because of federal law, essentially the normal planning regulations are overridden somewhat. I'm just giving a lay, like a simple explanation, not a legal explanation, but it means that it's very difficult to oppose phone towers in particular. At any rate, I think everyone's aware that the development assessment panel last week approved the Glandor phone tower, and we're dealing with the petition in that context. So not that we want to shut people out, but the petition has to be taken within that context. So I'll turn to Councillor Piper.
Can I just interject, Your Worship? I sat on the Development Assessment Panel last year, so I perhaps should declare a conflict of interest on this item as well.
Well, that is something of a point of order. I'll ask Ms. McKenzie to clarify. I can't see how it's a problem. There's no point of order. Please continue, Councillor Parker. The community didn't actually get to have a say in front of that last week. Now, that's a fundamental tenet of democracy, I think. If something's going to affect you and your property, you need to be able to stand in front of those who are going to make a decision and be able to put your case. Because it went through the courts, they didn't get the opportunity to do that. I take my hat off to Ms Ellis, who's with us in the gallery this evening, who's amazingly got 162 signatories on this. It's incredible from a fairly tight, small community. I'm personally immensely frustrated that we, as a council, can't do anything. We can't. All we can do is note it, and that's what it said in the report here. There's no recourse, there's nothing else we can do, which is incredibly frustrating.
Is that seconded? Councillor Hull?
That's something that probably needs to be considered on as many sites as possible, especially if they are potentially sensitive. I just want to clarify for those in the audience that council didn't enter into any agreement lightly. We had a situation where a phone tower would have been probably where the security guard gentleman is here from me to someone's back door, and council had a position not to make it that close, and that was the only reason council look to support a tower. It was either that or lose a significant amount of money in court and have it that close to someone's property. And unfortunately, council's not in a position here to find a site that is further away from people's property than this one. So it is a shame that nothing could be done on that front. But I just want to clarify, just in case those listening thought that council was just... That decision was cut and dry, because it wasn't as cut and dry as Councillor Hull described it.
Well, certainly, when these proposals come up, a lot of the changes depend on the goodwill of the telco at the time. It's more of a negotiation than having a real go in court. I'll put the motion then. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. We've noted the report and we'll formally notify the petitioner of what happened at the DAP. Move on to the next item or items. On page 44, we've got the first of three reports coming through from committees, and one of you councillors may wish to move that we accept all three reports. That is to say, receive and note the minutes of the three committee meetings, and noting that separate reports will be brought to council for consideration of any recommendations from the committees. So that's moved, Councillor Crossland, in respect of the infrastructure, people and culture, and finance and audit committees. Seconded, Councillor Telfer. Of course, you're free to ask questions about any of those reports. If there are no questions, I'll simply put that to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. It's just a convenient way of trying to get through the agenda a bit quicker, because there's a lot to deal with tonight. On page 75 of the agenda, we're dealing with the Community Recreation Development Plan Amendment, or DPA, the Statement of Intent. To go to the Minister. Councillor Crossland to move. Just while that's being... That is put up on the screen, is it? So is that how you wanted to move the motion, Councillor Crossland? So you're basically including Glade Crescent Reserve, but that would mean not including Capella Drive, is that right? Right. Very good. Well, first I'll ask if that is seconded. Councillor Pryor, then please go ahead, Councillor Crossland. Thank you. Just before I go to Councillor Pryor, can I ask a question of staff? If I look on page 85, in the draft where it talks about the need for amendment. In the report in front of me, it's got Capella and Glade to be considered further. So is it the case that if this motion is passed, those areas that are shaded, those lines are just taken out of the statement of intent itself? Ms. Dixon? It's just to clarify. Councillor Pryor, did you wish to add anything?
From a zoning perspective, and that I thoroughly support the motion at hand.
Yes, it was certainly a bit of a surprise to councillors as they discovered that some of our long-cherished sports fields and so on were actually built on residential land, so to speak. Councillor Hull, opposing the motion?
Opposing the motion. I didn't move it.
No. Are you opposing
the motion? No. I'm asking a question.
Oh, yeah? Go ahead.
I agree with Councillor Crosland that the term community zone, I'd like to ask the staff, how does that differ from community open space, which is the term that we all understand and requires a ministerial process to change? I'd like to know briefly what the difference is and what are the pros and cons of that change.
We'll ask Mr. Hooper, Head of Planning. Oh, no, we'll ask Mr. Melhuish, senior leading figure in the Planning Department, to come forward and explain. Good question, good answer. Any other questions? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And so we move on to page 111, the Corporate Performance Report. Perhaps I could start with any questions. Any questions at all? Councillor Chow.
Is about the last target, page 122, about the strategic plan and the business plan not lining up, and so a low level of alignment giving us a red there. My concern is, were we not aiming for work plans and three-year plans, and is it an appropriate key performance indicator if we're trying to match old plans to new plans?
I know what my answer would be that because we're in a period of transition, it's probably not a bad thing, but there's still a red light until we get on with adopting a business plan to replace the current 10-year plan. The red light is not necessarily a grievous fault, but it tells us we have to do something. That's the way I look at it. But, Mr. Skull, would you like to respond?
We need to get on with finishing the plan to 2019 that was discussed in the planning day. Work is being done on that, and what we were hoping is to get the draft to council as soon as possible, but I'm not sure of a date that I can actually commit to on that at this point, but suffice to say that it's on the way.
Other questions? Well out of the target range or something like that. All right, thank you. Just staff will take that on board. Councillor Holt?
Plenty. This is the...
As I understood it, that goes back to that April resolution of council, but perhaps staff can help me with that. Ms. Dixon?
Council considered the Mitchell Park project, both the resolved also to address that project and also address the indoor stadium as part of that. So they were combined.
Mr. Mifsud?
There is a specific resolution relating to the 14th of April last year's council meeting. So the report reference number is report number 2, and the resolution specifically stated them exactly in the order as you now see on the page 120 amendment that I've provided to each of you tonight. That was exactly as it was stated in your council resolution back in April last year.
Right, yeah. Just as a process point, with the agenda that came out on Thursday night, as far as I'm concerned, that's the agenda. So the additional page today can assist us, but and it could even be attached to the agenda, but it can't replace what was put out on Thursday night. Did staff want to respond to that? I'm not sure if do we have the same understanding or not. So I'm being told that the technically more correct page can be attached to the minutes so that those reading at home can have the benefit of that additional page we've seen tonight. Sends a perfectly fine way of going about it. I've just got one other question, and it's actually about that page. It's in relation to what everyone understands, and I'm talking when I say everyone, management and elected members, what we understand by major capital works proposals ready for approval by council. Now, on my own reckoning, I would have been happy to say that with the Edwardstown project, that it was actually brought to council ready for approval and approved. Now, it's a conditional approval on getting federal money, but it's actually ready. If the feds say yes, then we have approved it. So I don't have a reputation for being overly generous in relation to these matters, but I reckon we might have shifted into the acceptable range by getting that through. There was a lot of hard work that went into it, and that was the whole point of having it as a KPI, so that the chief executive and managers would drive towards getting these things ready so that they could either be approved unconditionally or approved subject to getting other funding. So it's a rhetorical question, but before we get into moving a motion, do either the members want to respond, or the Mr. Mitchell, do you want to have a go?
You're quite right. This is the second quarter corporate performance report, which technically ends at 31st of December. So the comment you've made is spot on. It has effectively been brought through to council and endorsed for progression, and that'll be appropriately picked up when we do the third quarter corporate performance report.
Right. Absolutely right. Yeah. Sorry, there's a lag effect. I'm definitely feeling a lag effect. Any other questions? Then would someone like to move the recommendation? Moved, Councillor Telfer. Is that seconded? Councillor Gard, thank you. Any further comment? Put it to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's approved unanimously. Thank you. So we turn to page 124 of the agenda, the second budget review. And again, you're probably going to tell me this applies to up to the 31st of December. Well, I'm getting the hang of it now. First of all, did councillors have any questions about what's in the report? Then I'll just invite someone to move accordingly. Move, Councillor Telfer. No? Move, Councillor Hutchinson. Sorry, I didn't hear that, sorry.
What was your exact question? Sorry. To the report, which section of the report you're referring to? Just through the chair, yes. So that's in response to the motion to look at that the provisions for dog on and off leash across the city. Yep, correct.
Bone towers. I'll put the motion. No, I won't. The Councillor Gard had a question.
I'm not sure. There's a subject that we have browsed over before, and that is borrowings and repayment of debt. And Councillor Telfer might have a view here as well, but is it that we should be reducing our borrowings with available monetary asset there or not? I'm wondering if there is any downside to be considered in that from a prudential point of view.
You're quite right, Councillor Gard. If we do have, for our treasury management policy, available funds, in the first instance we should use those funds to reduce future borrowings. You're quite right. Just to give you some context in terms of the borrowing rates, this is ballpark figures, so please don't quote me on these, but borrowing rates for a 10-year loan through the LGFA is around about 4.2% currently, and our deposit rates are 2.52, 2.79, thereabouts. So, yes, you're quite right. If we've got available funds through Treasury Management, we should first put that towards reducing new borrowings rather than borrowing at the maximum levels that we potentially forecasted.
That would seem to be the obvious thing to do from a returns point of view, but my question there really was, is there any downside that we need to consider when we do, when we actually take that option, which seems to be financially the best option, but is there anything else? I'm not aware top of mind whether there is, but you might get a comment.
I don't believe there is. It's generally reasonably clear-cut. Nothing when it comes to finances is always black and white, but it's generally pretty clear-cut that from a good prudential management point of view and from a good governance point of view, that's what you should do in the first instance.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. That could become the quote of the meeting, although it's still pretty early, that nothing in finances is black and white. but we certainly hope it is. Yeah, black and red could be. I've got a question, actually. I do appreciate the fact that we've now, on bottom of page 127 of the agenda, separated out the community partnership money, which is for major new projects, and that which is for the community partnership funding as originally envisaged. But I was going to ask Mr. Mepsud, in the draft budget that's going to be presented to us, are we going to have a lower figure for the community partnership scheme itself, given the substantial under expenditure on that line in past years?
Well, Mayor, that's another very good question. Council certainly has the discretion to do that. The current draft budget actually has a $1.9 million figure allocated to that line, but that's subject to council approval. So council absolutely has the discretion to do that if they so choose.
Very well. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried. And we turn to page 140 of the agenda, the informal briefings policy. Any questions before we launch into it? No. Well, Councillor Hull? just to cut in there, I did ask if there were any questions, and it sounds like you might have an amendment, or you might want to move it in an amended form to incorporate your sentiments. But well, Councillor Hull, I think the remedy to that is what comes out of this debate and the wording you wish to have in the policy. That's up to members. For whoever's going to move it, I was going to suggest a sort of a word processing change, that because the bottom paragraph on the first page and the top paragraph on the second page, which appear on pages 145, 146 of the report, because they deal with chairing of the meetings, I wonder if they could be moved into the middle of the part which is titled Chairing Agendas and Minute Taking. And look, it's remiss of me not to have raised it earlier, but it's better late than never, I suppose. If whoever's moving it would be prepared to incorporate that amendment, it's just a very, very small point, but it just means putting the appropriate material under the appropriate heading. Having said that, any other questions, or I'll seek someone to move. Councillor Gard.
Your Worship, I'm a little bit of an informal meeting. We conduct all sorts of meetings at various levels of formality, ranging down from our forums to the closed-door meetings we have, the management excluded after the forums, to one-on-one meetings like we've had today, etc. So am I sort of missing a point here, or is it really covering all meetings where we might be face-to-face on council business?
Well, Councillor Gard, that's an excellent question, because the legislative change from the State Parliament is an extraordinary impingement on the ability of local government councillors to make their decisions. As we have experienced over the last 16 months of this council, it's been extraordinarily useful to go into a session where it might be just elected members only, it might be elected members briefed by staff, to be able to shoot across the room a whole range of ideas. Yes, no, think out loud, say stupid things, contradict each other. Now, though they are discussions that simply would not take place with a gallery full of people, because nobody in public office likes to make a fool of themselves, nobody likes to put up proposals which might mean that some community group's going to be unhappy. So we don't want to offend anybody. Look, but behind closed doors, sometimes you do that, and it's for the good of the whole community. The informal gatherings definition, one could say, in the legislation is loose, and I'll ask Ms. McKenzie to comment on this in a minute. But on one reading of it, the sort of get-togethers that the Liberal Party and the Labor Party have at Christmas time, where no doubt some legislative ideas are discussed, would be covered, and it's ludicrous, because you're not going to have a Christmas party and invite 88,000 people along. It's just a ludicrous at that level. So what I know staff have done in this policy is give a definition of informal gatherings which at the one time meets the state legislative requirements but also is much more realistic about what we really understand to be our informal gatherings concerning council business. So when we have elected member forums, when we have committee meetings, when we have a streetscape working party, all of these things you expect to be covered, and so it's fair enough to be there to be a certain decorum and certain rules about that. But technically, there could be an argument that if I go to a staff member and say, why hasn't the footpath been done on that street, that's an informal gathering. And at that point, it is just ludicrous and unworkable. The LGA, this is in further answer to your question, the LGA came up with a model policy. This is greatly
amended from that, because I suggest that any council which adopts the model policy of the LGA will get themselves tangled up in knots very quickly with multiple contraventions. It not only takes what's in the legislation, but it probably goes even further in its prohibitions. So it's madness, as far as I'm concerned. So as to what it is, at this stage, there's probably not a clear answer. This is all very well for words to come down from the Oracle of State Parliament, but until people are tested with codes of conduct and court cases and so on, it's a bit hard to know what it really means. And we don't necessarily want to spend $20,000 on legal opinions, times 68 councils in South Australia, to find out, because I'm sure if you did that, you'd probably get 68 different opinions anyway. But Ms. McKenzie, can you shed some light on this?
That it's still quite broad in what an informal gathering is. Just to add further to that, the one thing that we haven't received yet is a confirmation of the regulations, and so we are waiting for those to be confirmed through Parliament, and once we have those, they may provide some further guidance in regards to what the policy should or shouldn't be, and if that's the case and we need to amend our policy, then we'll certainly bring it back.
Hence the, just to follow on from that, hence the very final wording there, this policy will be reviewed within 12 months after a general election and as required. So if regulations came out which rendered any part of that inconsistent, then obviously we'd have another look at it, simple as that. Councillor Valescu?
Yep. Wouldn't it be wiser to wait until the regulations come into effect and then take...
Councillor Valescu, oddly enough, the state government insists that we bring in our policy prior to 22nd of March, was it? 31st of March. Hasn't been enacted. Thank you. So I'm getting advice from Ms. Waits. It's anticipated that the law will be enacted on the 31st of March. We're not allowed to have any informal meetings after that date unless we have the policy in place. So at this council meeting, we need to put a policy in place, because if that law comes in a week's time, no more forums, no more committees, arguably. Committees are okay, but things like the Streetscape Working Party would be out. That's not a council-created committee. Ward briefings would be out. You know, it would be just a diabolical mess. So that's why we're not waiting. Councillor Telfer.
I'd like to see the paragraph number 2 on page 146 actually put in as another amendment or dot point. I know that, so I would like that whole section quoted for all informal gatherings. Public access will be determined on a case-by-case basis, but at the end of the next sentence, so that it's in the document. But I also would like to see at the end of the last that sentence something to the tenant of to progress the business of council. So what I'm getting at is that it's all right to say that we'll always have the public there, but the council is aware of the need to balance openness and transparency with opportunities for private discussions between council members and council members and staff to progress the business of council. So,
and Councillor Telf, can you just help me out by pointing to exactly where you're reading from?
I'm looking on page 146, timing of and access to informal gatherings of council, the little part 2 under that. I'm keen that that actually be physically cut and pasted into the our motion, so that we have it there, that we will attempt, obviously, to have public access, but it's not always appropriate because we're progressing on the business.
So after the words, staff, to progress council business. Is that it? Or, sorry?
Yeah. To progress council business, yeah.
Yep. So staff got hold of that?
So this is another dash.
It'll be one of the amendments. Yeah. That's why Councillor Philp was referring to it. So the paragraph to which Councillor Philp was referring, which is, say, the fourth paragraph on page 146, that should have the words "to progress council business" before the full stop, and therefore it should be there as an amendment. So the amendment should be that the fourth paragraph on page 146 read as follows, and then as suggested. That's right, we amendment in a lay sense. Making sure that staff had that in there in the way that Councillor Telfer was suggesting. No. It's not paragraph one, it's another dot point under paragraph two.
Another dash point.
Well, yeah, but it's in the motion as you have to do it as a dot point under paragraph two, because it says the policy will be, as in appendix two, subject to the changes. I mean,
but we're still getting the last few words are still going.
Yes, they are. Yep, we're getting there. Councillor Hull, while that's being done, do you have a go? The presiding member could be the mayor, a staff member, or another elected member. And we've actually said that the chair, I mean, in the policy, as suggested to you, the chair must see that the gatherings are conducted in accordance with policy. So, you know... That's right. Right at the end, before the final full stop. Lovely. That's exactly what Councillor Telfer was saying. Let's go to Councillor Pryor.
Quick one about the notifications associated with this. This has a potential to be a very large burden for someone somewhere in the council. If we look at notification of planned briefing sessions we published on the council's website, for all other informal gatherings, public access term of a case by case basis, how do we? I mean, we're under strict regulations to notify when we have a formal meeting. I've seen a recall reading here somewhere that we're required to notify these informal meetings on our website. Have I read that right?
That's right. So can staff advise of the measures being taken to update the website on a weekly basis about these things? Ms. McKenzie?
Currently working through what they might look like with our ICT and how we're going to put them up there. But the intent is at the moment, so for example, for an elected member forum, it'll list when the forum's being held, the topics that are being covered, and then those items that will be considered without members of the public present. So we will need to incorporate those as part of our governance practices.
That's fair enough for a relatively well-controlled meeting, but I mean, we're talking about all sorts of meetings here between elected members and other people around the community.
Well, you see, Councillor Pryor, that in the draft policy, informal gatherings are defined a bit more tightly than what others might define them, and until proven otherwise by regulations or a court case or something, we can stick with that narrower definition, and it'll be workable on that basis, perhaps. Councillor Blisky.
To some information, and that some of that information is not always something that can be given to us for whatever reasons, good reasons, in a public meeting. So if we're discussing staff issues, potential commercial things, being given information about projects which would be revealed publicly a bit later on, so there could be embargoes and things like that, so we need that option. I guess moving forward, we used to have a broader committee, so whether we have committee sessions available for the public where we move into here at some point and then go back into the committee room at the end of that, that could be something to consider. I think also that we have informal gatherings that everyone's invited to. I suspect in other councils there was informal gatherings which basically determined a way forward, and I think that's what we need to be careful of. I think the most important thing is, are our informal gatherings determining a way forward, making a decision, or are we just...
In answer to your two questions, Councillor Blisky, first of all, the legislation does anticipate that on a case-by-case basis, public can be excluded. So if there was a personal matter or a commercially sensitive matter, that can always be done. A lot of the time, and I mean a huge amount of the time, we are discussing internal working documents at electing men forums. So there will be, I foresee, there will be a lot of times when we will need to have a closed session because we're discussing material that has not come out and properly hasn't come out into the public domain at an early stage. So that's one thing. There is allowance for that, in other words, in the scheme. Secondly, the need for our elected member forums not to become decision-making bodies was stressed to me at an early stage, I can say, and I thank Ms. McKenzie for that advice. And it's consequent upon that I'm always very, very careful when we have discussions at elected members' forums to indicate that what we're really doing is at most suggesting to staff what we're after in the report that comes to council. When any report or recommendations of staff then come to council, it is always open for any elected member to move something differently, to amend, to say whatever they want to in the debate and so on. So in that way, I'm doing everything I can to ensure that informal gatherings are not decision-making forums. The only case I've ever heard of, really, that has created any sort of problem is a well-known Western Suburbs Council where there were regular meetings of councillors of a particular political party, and because they form a very substantial proportion of the members of the council, if they agree something in a political caucus, effectively they are then deciding what happens in council. Now, we've never had that problem. So I think if we just continue much as we are and be sensible and careful about it, it'll probably work out. Other questions before we go into debate? Councillor Pfeiffer, I'm happy for Ms. McKenzie to add to this, but I understand the intent of that to be that there is some official status or semi-official status. It is a grey area. But if, for example, a ward briefing is essentially called by the chief executive through his employees, it's arranged for councillors to attend and get information. Likewise, if elected members say we're going to have a streetscape working party and it's going to meet these dates, then elected council has created that venue, that gathering. But if we go out to the car park after and say, oh, let's go across the road for a drink, then it wouldn't be covered by this. And that's the intent, to separate out the purely social events from events that are likely to have some official discussions, or at least discussions about official business, as opposed to recreational matters. Councillor Hull? Oh, sorry, before I call on you, Councillor Hull, Ms. McKenzie, what did you want to say about that definition? I'm getting a tick from the governance manager there. Councillor Hull? Councillor Hull, I'll take that as an ironic rhetorical question. Any other questions? Then perhaps it's time for somebody to move accordingly. Councillor Westwood, thank you. Is that seconded? Yeah. Thank you, Councillor Hull. Did you wish to speak? Oh, Councillor Westwood, sorry, I thought you were, you'd sort of summed it all up with a wise look. No, Councillor Westwood, the mover, okay. Please proceed.
Thank you. I only move this just because we need, on a procedural basis, we need it. But I do believe that this is going to be legislation and accompanying regulations will be very stifling. And it'll take a lot of intellectual energy from us, and we're going to be—it's going to be a very interesting experience. And I actually regret that it's come to pass. I can understand that where some councils may have been meeting off campus for the purpose of making decisions behind closed doors, specifically, that this is a. Probably as good a measure, or maybe it's a bit clumsy at this stage, but it's a measure to try to counteract that. And unfortunately, we're all caught up in it. So basically, I've moved it just so we do have the furnishings and we can carry on our normal business.
Well said.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hull.
We need to have a policy. Something that we have some concerns about. It's a bit dubious that what I just said, that the state government is imposing on us something that they don't do themselves. When they have their caucus meetings, are they open to the public? No, they're not. So, you know, it is a dilemma, but we have to play ball. I welcome the Telfer intervention with this. I think at least it makes a statement about what we would like to do. And it shows good faith in terms of the conflicting position the state government has taken on this, given they don't practice what they preach. But I think, above all, it'll actually deal with, by policy at least, something that existed in the previous council period, where I left those meetings as an elected member not knowing what I could go back to the community and talk about, because everything was inherently confidential. And it left you in a position where you were shit scared to talk to the community about anything that was going on with council. So
for fear of being breached. So I would actually welcome this in those terms, that it actually, by policy, it actually gives some certainty about us being able to go away and reasonably talk to our community or the media or whoever else was interested about matters that were of vital importance to the council. But it was actually a gag, really, on elected members, how that operated back then. So I welcome it in that context. But I would welcome also that the state government actually practice what it actually preaches. And maybe we'll remind them of that when they do come along, when there's a chemical spill or something else that they want to keep hush-hush about their, inconsistencies, put it that way.
And against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's all those against. It's carried by a majority. Thank you. We turn to page 147 of the agenda, Park Holme Community Hall. Councillor Crossman. Councillor Blescu. An amendment, yes.
Running the use and options for community park for Park Holme Community Hall and require administration to report back to council. I think the community wants to...
Sorry, Councillor Blescu, can we just be clear where all of that fits in? Is it a complete replacement or... And if you've got it written down, could you bring it up, please, to Mr. Waits? Well, I want to see it first. Right, so what I'm gathering from that, Councillor Blescu, is that you're not endorsing the undertaking of site investigations into potential disposal. Is that right?
And that could include disposal, but also now that we're running it, as opposed to the committee, look at other options as well. So I think we need to be broad in what investigation in the future.
There was a point of order by Councillor Crossland, and I uphold the point of order. I think the amendment is actually in opposition to the motion. So what I'd suggest is that we could take that as foreshadowing a motion that you could move if Councillor Crossland's motion fails. In other words, if Council does not resolve to undertake site investigations into potential disposal, then, Councillor Blescu, you could come back if you wish to say, well, let's have a look at all these other things, which is of a different order, really. Question, Councillor Byron?
Those reports will cover everybody who's using the hall and all those things that are happening, so we will get that covered in that report.
They do. Councillor Byram, on page 149, you have a very full list of the sort of things that are considered, including, use of the place, among other things. Councillor Gard?
Point two of the recommendations require administration to bring back a report at the conclusion of the site investigation regarding the potential disposal of Park Holme Community Hall. There's an inference in the last paragraph of the exec summary that it may not be that we desire to dispose of it after all.
And that's exactly right.
Right. So there is probably that appeases... I understand that it may not appease Jason or Councillor Blescu on that, because it's not black or white, is it?
So just to be clear on the process,
This motion, if passed, asks staff to look at a whole range of matters. They're listed on page 149. They include financial matters, but also the users of the hall in this case, and a report is brought back. And at that point, we can consider, do we want to continue using, do we want disposal, or do we want something else?
So just second question on that,
yep.
Is if from point two it's found that there is a good avenue for the disposal of the hall, would that, what's the word I want, make the other exercise of future use subordinate? Would, in other words, the disposal take precedence rather than still looking at the options of how it might be used?
I would defer to staff on that one. Mr. Scott.
That the investigation would decide on the consequences of closing the hall, so, you know, the consequences on the community. Community consultation is part of it. If the investigation actually recommended disposal, then the benefits to council and our operations on selling it would exceed the negative consequences. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, I think it does. Thanks very much.
And just before we go on, I think I need to clarify something as well, because unlike what we did with the Tock H Hall, there's a two-stage report process. It can be done concurrently, but this is only the initial stage of the site investigation. So it's more limited. If we ultimately wanted to dispose of the hall, first there would be a site investigation. Then, if we're prompted by that, could ask for the thorough investigation that is required by the Local Government Act. And if we're happy with that, then we could decide to dispose of it after community consultation. So we're talking about the very first step of a lengthy process. Councillor Valescu, did you have a question?
I think a broader report will then bring the community along with the decision and looking what else is happening in the area, as opposed to just saying, oh, let's dispose of it, or why shouldn't we? I just want to remind residents that there was quite a concern when there wasn't disabled access in that facility for the toilets, and there was, you know, that was a big issue. I think going out there like this...
Councillor Wersku, you're not asking a question as such, so... No, well, I'll take that as your contribution in the debate, but and you've still got more time if you want.
They're saying to dispose or not to dispose. Isn't the report focus going to be seen, and pretty much from what Mr. Skull said, going to be about the pros and cons of selling the asset?
Well, as I say, there are two reports. As I said, Councillor Valescu, there are two reports. One is a site investigation. That's actually a pretty basic examination, focused more on finance, property, structure. If council are happy to pursue it further, in other words, first we're looking at actually what is there in terms of finance and property. The second report, which is required by the Local Government Act, is much more comprehensive. It looks at users, potential use, the positive and negative impacts of disposing or not disposing, and
it's really quite far ranging. But if it's remotely in the consideration of council that we might want to go down a disposal track, then this is the very first step. And yes, it has got the word disposal in it, but if you want to reassure the community, you can always indicate that it is a very, very long way to disposal. But I'll ask staff to add to that, or indeed even correct me where I'm wrong. Who's going to respond? Ms. Dixon.
Council that would then assist council to make a decision whether you wish to dispose or you saw other future use of the asset.
Well, and then Councillor Gard.
Form it, the basis of the report that will come back to us.
No, sorry, I'll just correct you there, because they ultimately must be addressed, but I don't believe they would be addressed in the report that's called the initial report, which is called for by this motion. Ms. Dixon.
Could I ask that the zoning of that parcel of land be provided to us as well, so we have rule out or rule in the DPA?
Yes, could we? Do we have information on zoning at the moment? Could Ms. Hampton come forward, please? We'll mime from the back about what kind of zoning it is.
The land use is public halls, it's zoned C commercial, and description of public hall, so it's zoned commercial.
Yes, it was known as the Bug House. Councillor Gard, question.
Be more precise to be saying regarding the future of Park Holme Community Hall rather than preempting anything. I risk cutting.
Councillor Gard, if you want to move an amendment, do that.
Yeah.
But I doubt that it's going to have much ameliorating effect. If there are no more questions, I'm looking for questions. Okay, Councillor Holme.
Tonsley Hall, there's been a number of halls sold, and there's always been a premise of community renewal or community benefit from the sale. Has the administration got any ideas as to where community benefit or renewal will take place to actually go along with this sale? It's usually, but not always, goes hand in hand.
Yes, early days for that, Ms. Dixon.
Funds from any disposal of asset would come back in and then go towards community benefit. So, and my understanding is that's part of the Act as well.
Yes, It's certainly a possibility, but as I say, we're a long way off that sort of consideration in detail. Other questions or to speak? Councillor Pfeiffer. Guard variation. There's a point of order, Councillor Crossan. Let me just consider that for a moment. Look, I think it's okay, so I'm going to say that there's no point of order. It's clearly still a site investigation directed to consideration of the future of the hall. So I think that it probably has the intent, well, it looks like it has the intent of ameliorating political concerns, but I think it's fundamentally going to be the same type of report. So. There's no point of order. Councillor Pfeiffer, please continue. Adopt the Appleby manoeuvre and put the amendment directly. If it's seconded, is it seconded? Councillor Westwood. Did you wish to speak, Councillor Westwood, either to the amendment or to the original motion?
I think that the original motion is prejudiced and almost giving an instruction and without a doubt will colour some of the thinking of the staff as they're writing reports. Not that they will side with the disposal unduly, I'm sure. But I think that the amendment is more palatable and a better balanced approach to the future use of the hall. Thanks.
Well, I thought you did have the opportunity to begin with. Well, I'm going to give you the chance to speak at the... I know you haven't spoken, but I didn't understand that you wanted to when you first moved it. Order, one thing at a time. Councillor Crossland's raised a point of order and I haven't ruled on that yet. But Councillor Crossland, I didn't understand you to want to speak to the motion when you moved it.
Actually moved on to that. The motion was challenged and we became a point of order and it's drifted on since then. Questions, point of orders. We never got back to the original motion and now it's gone to an amendment.
Well, no. Order. Order. This is getting very messy. Technically, immediately after an amendment, it should be put. And, Councillor Crossland, I am sorry to have overlooked you at the commencement of the debate, but to be honest, you could have raised your point of order earlier. So what I'm going to do is put the amendment but then I'm going to, bearing in mind that you'll have the right of reply, I'll give you an opportunity to make any further points before debate continues, using my discretion. But I'll put the amendment at this point. So all those in favour of we're voting on the amendment. So this is to replace the words potential disposal with in regard to and the word future in the second paragraph. So it's basically to soften the words potential disposal. All those in favour of the amendment, raise your hand. All those against the amendment, raise your hand. The amendment is carried. Now, it is rather messy, Councillor Crossland, but better late than never. I give you the opportunity to speak to the motion.
Basically, when we came to council, we looked at the ongoing expenditure, particularly assets that basically lead to ongoing rate rises. We know we've got a large number of assets in the north and very few in the south. Look, we could go down the track of, look, let's build more assets in the south, but realistically, I wouldn't be supportive of that because that would ultimately lead to even more rates. You know, by the time we finish building another 50 halls in the coastal ward and southern hills, God knows what our rates would be. But as a commitment, we agreed that we would look at asset disposal. When it presented, we know that those decisions are not always favourable to the community, and that was intimated at the time that when push came to shove, all those people who said, oh yes, we'll get rid of assets, would all of a sudden do a quick U-turn and not vote for it. I think it's beneficial to be open and transparent with the public that we are trying to reduce the number of assets we have and reduce council rates. If you go forward with a report like this with the intention of looking at asset disposal, which we are, but pretty it up to try and pretend that that's not the ultimate aim, I think you're not being open, transparent or honest. When we had the meeting the other night, the values we all came up with was integrity, honesty, trust, openness, transparency. Please don't all of a sudden trash those values. Make it clear that we are still going ahead with asset disposal. This has presented itself for exploration towards asset disposal. So I would ask you to vote against the amendment.
Just to be clear, we did vote. The amendment was passed, so we now have a reformed motion in front of us. Councillor Appleby, you no longer have a point of order, do you? No, I'll come back to you. Councillor Hutchinson had a question.
My question was, would we not be going through this process for each individual hall if we look at disposal? Would this be the process?
If we dispose of any...
Or consider
if we dispose of any, I don't know, pretty well any real estate, at least, we'd be going... Well, any community land, we would be going through this process. Pretty well any real estate.
So this would be a repetitive process and we'd need to be putting this out now. I'm just making that point.
You'll be seeing a lot more of these if we are true to what we discussed at the planning day. And again, that's not decisions, but just topics to bring up to council that we discussed at planning day. Byron, did you have a question? Or... I'll come back to you, sorry, because I did recognise Councillor Appleby first. Councillor Appleby.
It's effectively a vote to sell Parkholme Community Hall. It presents it as order.
I will pick you up on that, because it is clearly not that, and you must not misrepresent the motion.
It's effectively a vote to sell it, because we're jumping the gun. We're not considering any of the other options. In the report on page 149 in the third paragraph, it says consideration could be given to options for the hall, e.g. dispose, review management model to increase utilisation, alternative community facilities in the area, etc. But we're cordoning off all those areas and we're just looking at disposal, so we're sending a very clear message to the community that it's all about selling it off. And I think we should be keeping considering the other options in the community. The report notes that the hall is in fair condition and it has 60 years useful life left in it. So to just sell it for it to be bulldozed seems nonsensical to me. And I also think that we should be looking at options of leasing it to groups. It doesn't necessarily have to be that we manage it, but we may find groups out there that can manage it. I know just a fortnight ago, a friend of mine who's involved in the church said that he's looking for a hall. They've subsequently found something, but there may be other church groups out there that can be an anchor tenant and lease the rooms out during the week to other groups. I don't think we should be cordoning off areas and saying, no, we're only going to sell it. We shouldn't have such a blanket view.
All right, Councillor Byron. Councillor Byron, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Worship. I am a little bit disappointed in the changes with the amendment, but I did have a question about that to start with. If this motion now is not passed, we then are stopping any investigation into the use of Park Holm Community Hall?
It means that unless the motion was rescinded, then there would be no site investigations undertaken into the hall. Wish to speak further?
So if it was voted against, we can't then bring up another motion to go back to the first?
Well, it would need to be a motion that was not inconsistent. I beg your pardon. If this motion was voted against, if somebody wanted to bring up a fresh motion, it would be fine as long as it wasn't effectively restating this one.
Yeah.
To put that different ways.
That's my problem.
Sorry. I'll ask staff to put that more eloquently.
It's closed.
Councillor Byron,
can I talk? Well,
you've raised a very good point, and we're going to research that. Proceed to debate the matter.
Thank you. I know that the debate and comments that people were making before was that they were worried about the wording as to what is going to be felt out there in the community. But we also have the people out there who are saying that they want to see council doing something. They know we have too many little halls and too many pockets. They want to see investigations into possible disposals going on. So we've got two sides of the coin here. Are we going to just always be pandering to one group? What about the other groups who want to see us taking action and investigating these issues? Because we do need to go down that track. And as Councillor Crossland has said, to cover it up, we've got to be open and honest. We are looking at the possibility of disposal. The disposal investigation, I asked that question before, was going to include all the usages, and it even says there that meeting with existing users to ascertain utilisation, future needs and discuss alternative sites. That was all part of the first part of the investigation. So I don't see what the problem was with the talking about it, but I will wait to see. Sorry, I don't see the problem in the change of the words, the original words I thought to fit adequately, but I want to know from this question as to whether we have a chance, if we vote against this, whether we can revisit.
We'll come back to you shortly in relation to that. Councillor Hull, did you have a question? You must have had a few questions already. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, I think that contrary to the suggestion that we're trying to hoodwink the community on this is quite the opposite. I think there's an appetite in the chamber for more information. And I've got to be honest and say that on page 149, I've alluded to these 20 dot points before, that I would like to see these answered before we actually make any decision. So it's a bit like the Unley Council recently. Mr Mayor decided they'd actually take the audacious step and put parking meters at a tram stop, only to find out that they were putting the parking meters not on their land. They didn't own the land. So, fail. I would like to see us actually address these issues. Now, are we going through a lot of debate tonight about a hall that might have some caveat on it that was donated by some cinematographer that you know, felt that it was a good idea to give it to council under certain conditions? We don't know. We don't know. So I would like to know the answers to all those dot points on page 149 before I actually consider anything about this hall. This is an amendment by Councillor Pfeiffer that is actually seeking more information, not less, to actually be able to actually sell this. I would like to know more about, and it talks in here about the council's plan. It talks about the council's direction. Now, if Edwardstown's being redeveloped three blocks away, I think that's useful information for us to actually take on board in terms of actually selling this community, because communities don't like losing amenity or the perception of losing amenity. But if we actually tell them what they're actually going to get in replace of it, it's like Pioneer Hall. Pioneer Hall replacement is the cultural centre. And most people, not all, but most people actually bought that it was community renewal, a renewal of a community asset. And, more recently, Hallett Cove. Not too many people were upset about the closure of the current or the old Hallett Cove Library because they were new, they were getting a new one. So I just think that we need to be smarter about this. The original motion was probably as well intended as it was and consistent with an understanding that we had, was probably a bit of a blunt instrument. We are actually dealing with the community here. You know, if we're actually the board of a passport company and we decided we're going to get rid of the old house down in the far paddock, that'd be a bit different, but we're not.
Councillor Hull, that was for you. Now, answer to Councillor Byram's very good question can be found in Regulation 12 of the Local Government Procedures and Meetings Regulations of 2013. And that makes it clear that if this motion is lost, it simply, that motion or something similar to it can't be brought again for 12 months. So it's not the rescission matter where you have a positive thing that you then can't go back on. If a motion putting something forward is lost, well, obviously there's nothing to rescind, but you can't move that same motion again or something substantially like it for 12 months. No, it wasn't the question decided by council. That actual motion was never decided. But, in my view, the motion that is now before the council is substantially the same as the first one. So we're either getting a site investigation or we're not. If we decide not to, then we don't revisit this question for 12 months. Okay. Now, Councillor Blescu, I consider that you've spoken when you moved your amendment. No, I mean, after my intervention, you could speak further. You don't get another whole bite of the cherry. So you've spoken. Sorry. Any more speakers? Otherwise, I'll leave it with Councillor Crossland.
Look, it is what it is. It's a real shame that we have these arguments, and I would love to see people who have some vested interest and don't want to see the motion put forward in its form recommended, that perhaps they read the agenda beforehand and submit an amendment so that we don't spend the best part of 20-odd minutes talking about changing a couple of words to get a report done. I don't want to see this actually just go in the pending tray for 12 months, because that doesn't really help anybody. So against my better judgment, I'll be voting in favour of the report with the words used, but with those words for people to be a bit more conscientious in future.
I'll put the motion as amended. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, it's carried by majority.